This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, WMUK's Erlene McMichael tells us about two big youth forums on race that officials hope give middle school to college-age students a safe place to both talk and plan for change. But first, what did voters' overwhelming rejection of a plan to boost the state sales tax to help pay for road funding really mean? Gongwer News Service editor Zach Gorchow blogged that the winners from Tuesday's vote are the No New Taxes crowd, while the losers include Governor Rick Snyder and anyone who wanted to fix the roads by way of a ballot proposal. Zach Gorchow, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Gordon.
Let's first of all go look back a little bit. We'll look forward in a moment. But as we look back, how historic is the defeat of Proposal 1, considering the overwhelming margin against?
It's very historic. It is the lowest yes percentage at 19.9% since the state adopted the 1963 Constitution when looking at a constitutional amendment on the ballot. And it appears to be, at this stage, although I'm still researching it, among the three or four worst performing constitutional amendments in the last 107 years since we had the 1908 Constitution. So this was an epic disaster, I guess is the best way to put it.
So we're speaking on Wednesday morning, and Governor Snyder has already indicated that fixing the roads is going to require some sort of revenue increase. Now, going back to what you said in your blog, the No New Taxes crowd got a victory Tuesday night. Is the governor likely to get some pushback on the idea that they can't find the money in the existing budget to fix the roads?
Yeah, it's already happening. I mean, the Speaker of the House, Kevin Cotter, met with reporters this morning, and while he did not rule out a tax increase, he made it clear that he and his caucus are going to put forward a proposal that largely does not rely on new revenue. You know, you do have a number of the supporters of road funding saying this primarily wasn't a vote about taxes, but, you know, when you have a defeat of this magnitude, it's going to make it even harder. It was already going to be extremely difficult, but it's going to make it even harder to try to do this with a lot of new revenue, or principally with new revenue. I mean, that's what people said before the vote, and I know that, you know, people are trying to put their best face on this, that this wasn't about roads, this wasn't about taxes, this was about the proposal and how complex it was. And it was about how complex it was. That was a big part of it. But to ignore the message on taxes entirely, you know, for a big part of the electorate, that was why they voted no, and I think that's a mistake to totally ignore it.
Now, the governor has already said that a construction season has been lost for this year because of the defeat of Proposal 1. We know that it took a long time to get to the point that this proposal got on the ballot with all the other laws that were attached to it. Is it fair to say that it is going to be a while before we see some real concrete proposals that might become the next road funding package get anywhere close to getting passed by the House and Senate?
Oh yes. Yeah, definitely. I think you're going to see sort of an initial flurry of proposals, or at least thoughts and calls for certain ideas. But the idea that the legislature and the governor are going to, you know, use this defeat as a rallying point and be able to strike an agreement in short order is very hard to conceive that that's going to happen. You know, it's still an extremely tough issue. I mean, they had really their best opportunity. If they were going to do this by raising taxes, their best opportunity to do it was in December after the Michigan Senate passed a big fuel tax increase to address the issue. And the majority Republicans of the House decided they did not want to do that. And that's how this ballot proposal was born. You know, the idea that now, well, revenues are going to be found, or, you know, we're going to be able to put together some sort of long-term funding mechanism. I just don't see it happening for quite some time.
Again, we're very early in this process, but is there any sense coming out of either camp, you know, Republicans, Democrats, or House and Senate, about what the elements are that they would find more acceptable, or perhaps in this case less repulsive, to get some sort of a roads package through the legislature and to the governor for his signature?
It's a little early on that yet. You know, nobody's coming out and putting out, you know, here's my bill at this point, you know, except for a couple senators or legislators who are, you know, not going to be at the center of these negotiations. it's just too early to say. I think the governor is going to take a little bit of time here. There's not much he can propose that he hasn't already proposed. You know, he's proposed a fuel tax increase. He's proposed a vehicle registration fee increase. He's proposed a combination of the two. You know, there's not a lot of other ways to get at this unless you want to slash funding to a lot of other programs and put that toward roads. But a lot of entities have made it clear they don't want that. The governor's made it clear he doesn't want that. There's just no easy answer on this.
Going back to your blog post, as you noted that there will probably be suggestions that a simpler ballot proposal might win the day with voters. And I have to read this line because I have to give you credit. It's very well written. That probably will cause road construction interests who put about $6 million into Proposal 1 to throw up in their collective mouths. Are you telling us that the next solution for roads, whenever it comes, is not likely to include a vote of the people?
I would be really, really surprised. Yeah, the answer to your question is yes. I just don't see that happening. You have a defeat of this magnitude. You know, I know people have talked about the lead up to Proposal A, that a number of proposals were defeated, and some of them soundly. But when you have a defeat of this scope, I just can't see them going to another yes or no ballot proposal. I mean, yes, you could theoretically put a 1% sales tax increase on the ballot and say all of those revenues would go to roads. But the idea that voters are going to say, well, that's okay, we'll support that, and to the point of 50% plus one, I just don't see it. I don't see the interest behind more funding for roads being willing to go out and drop another $10 million, you know, probably down a rat hole to make that happen. If there is going to be another vote on this, it would have to be some type of Proposal A, choose one or the other scenario. And Proposal A of 94, voters essentially pick between raising sales tax or raising the income tax to fund schools. There was no ability to choose no tax increase. To do that would be an enormous lift. It would take the legislature basically agreeing to put a guaranteed tax increase on the ballot. I'd be pretty surprised, given the conservative nature of the legislature, if they'd be willing to go down that road. But that would be the only way, choose one or the other option.
One last thing, Zach. You have written a couple of times leading up to this election about Governor Snyder's apparent interest in at least keeping his name in the mix for the Republican presidential race, and perhaps maybe even at some point down the road getting into that campaign. Does this vote make what you have said many times is a long shot even longer because he has put his name on something pretty big and had 80% of the voters in his state reject it?
I mean, it definitely does not help, and I think it does hurt. You know, this was his signature issue for the year, and really the last 2 years. And this was, I said this yesterday, this is one of the biggest political miscalculations in modern Michigan political history. I mean, the idea that the governor and the top legislative leadership thought that this could pass, given how complex it was, how the unlikelihood of voters agreeing to raise their own taxes when given a yes or no option, was a monstrous miscalculation. And it certainly, for those who are thinking, well, you know, Rick Snyder, you know, maybe could be an interesting candidate. He's keeping his name out there, no matter how long a shot it is. It certainly throws some cold water on that. I mean, it indicates that the governor now is likely going to be tied up trying to figure out this roads issue for some time. And if he did have any thoughts of embarking on a national campaign, you know, the idea that he's going to be able to solve the roads issue is pretty much out the window, because there's no way he's going to be able to go off to New Hampshire and Iowa and try to get a heavy lift like roads done over the course of the year.
Zach Gorchow, as always, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Gordon.
Zach Gorchow is the editor of the Gongra News Service. You can find a link to Zach Gorchow's blog post on Proposal 1 and a longer version of this interview at WMUK.org.
You're listening to West Southwest on WMUK. I'm Earlene McMichael. We've been seeing video clips on TV and the internet chronicling America's growing racial tensions, played out most recently in Baltimore, Maryland. Two separate events in Kalamazoo over the next couple of days seek to hear from youth, a voice that organizers say isn't always part of the dialogue regarding race relations. Organizers say by holding their youth forums, they hope to be proactive in order to avoid violent protests and unjustified police-involved shootings here. The Kalamazoo Youth Summit on Racism is Saturday at the Arcus Center for Social Justice at Kalamazoo College. Then the Youth Lives Matter Community Forum is Monday at Mount Zion Baptist Church. I met this week with representatives from both events, Jacob Penny Johnson from the Kalamazoo Youth Summit and the Reverend Lindsay Bell from the Youth Lives Matter event. Let's listen now. I'm going to start with Jacob Penny Johnson. You're representing the Southwest Michigan Black Heritage Society, which is the lead organizer of the Youth Summit on Racism. Tell me a little bit about that event and who your sponsors are.
Right on. Yeah, so the Youth Summit on Racism is sponsored by the Racial Healing Initiative of the Southwest Michigan Black Heritage Society. And it's also in collaboration with, of course, the Arcus Center and ERACE, Eliminating Racism and Claiming and Celebrating Equality. Some folks from the Kalamazoo Promise helped out with the organizing, as well as some folks from KidNet and Pretty Lake Camp.
Now, how did this event come up?
Yeah, so the event came up a while back ago. So the Southwest Michigan Black Heritage Society has been sponsoring the Summit on Racism, which has been going on for some time in Kalamazoo.
Yeah, about 10 years. They just celebrated 10 years.
Yeah, and so, you know, I've attended that for the past few years. And I'd say it was about 2 years ago that I kind of mentioned to Donna that we need some young folks in the room. Like, this Summit on Racism is great, but there's a lack of young folks' voice in the room. And one of the reasons is because it was scheduled on a Friday at, you know, 9 in the morning when school is going on. And then I was approached by Donna in the fall of last year. She asked if I'd like to help out on organizing a youth summit on racism. And I said, of course. And we've been planning it for the last 5 or 6 months.
And just so our listeners can have a sense, when you brought up this idea that you need some more young voices on the surrounding the issue of racism, is that because that was a personal issue to you? Are you a younger person?
Yeah, definitely. And I found myself being one of the youngest people in the rooms.
And if you don't mind me asking, what is your age? Because our listeners can't see you.
Right now, I'm 27, you know, which is maybe not that young. But I've been attending the summit for some time. And, you know, even being 27, I still kind of looked around and said, hey, I'm kind of, you know, one of the youngest people in this room. And that's, to me, was somewhat of a issue.
Now, what's your target audience for this event, the Youth Summit on Racism, coming up?
We'll have some college-age folks helping to facilitate, but for the summit itself and participation-wise, we're specifically looking for middle and high schoolers. We're hoping people who are in the youth lives will help get them there.
Are you hoping to do this event every year, or how often do you hope to do it?
Yeah, so this is the first annual Kalamazoo Youth Summit on Racism, and it is very much my intention, and I believe everyone at the planning committee's intention, to have this be a reoccurring event.
What's the format going to be?
It's going to be from 10:30 to 3:30, and we are going to break it down with a few different tracks, so to speak. So we are inviting people who are working directly with youth to attend and sit back but not participate. We really want youth voice in the room. So the event starts at 10. We'll gather and kind of, you know, have some introduction. ERACE, again, Eliminating Racism and Claiming and Celebrating Equality, they put on workshops.
Yes, they put on, yes, around anti-racism workshops.
Right, right, right. So we've got a few folks from there who will come and share the definition of racism. So a lot of times we find, you know, with youth or adults, when we're talking about race and racism, that sometimes we're talking about different things. And we've got some videos to watch.
What will the films be about? Is it about things dealing with racism?
Yes, but more so on a personal basis. So the short film, or the short clip, should I say, is it's called The Danger of a Single Story. And really what it's about is how we all have stories or prejudice or bias, and how that might be a little bit different than racism.
Hmm. So you're wanting to show the distinction perhaps between bias and racism and getting the audience to understand that?
Somewhat. And we also hope to have some conversations about that too. So we hope before the video that we can or the youth rather, can have some conversations on what they think racism is. So before we give them a definition, or before we throw a definition in the room, or we want youth to lift up their voices and their experiences on what, you know, what they think it is. After lunch is when we'll have some breakouts, and we really hope for that to be a time that youth think about, inform some ideas of how they can fight racism in the future, or how they can...
In their day-to-day lives.
In their day-to-day lives, yeah. And then at 2:30, we're inviting community members and leaders to come back and hear a report out on those ideas and things that were talked about in the breakout group. It is our hopes that we can get as many youth and young folks from different cultures and ethnicities and races into the room. And I think young people of color, young black males, young brown males and females, have a very real experience of race and racism in their lives, and I think white folks do also. But I think we experience it different ways, and I think in order to come to some common understanding, we need to have safe spaces where we can hear about these different experiences and share with each other.
I'm going to switch now over to another youth event going on, and that's Youth Lives Matter. Recently, you know, they've been having what, hashtag Black Lives Matter, after the man in Staten Island got choked by police on the street. I'm going to turn to Reverend Lindsay Bell, who's the vice president of the Northside Ministerial Alliance and pastor of First United Baptist Church, to talk to us about that event.
Well, thank you. This is an event that we are planning in hopes that we can be proactive before something that has been going on across the nation happens here in our community. We want to be proactive in the approach of developing the right types of relationships, providing the right type of information to our young people so that they understand how to interact with law enforcement, how they should be conducting themselves in their community, so that there's no need for law enforcement to ever enter into the picture. And so, you know, this is an opportunity for us to really, as Jacob was indicating, to hear what's on the heart of the young people, what's going on, how are they viewing this situation? Because some of them may be complacent and not think that anything is like that could ever happen in Kalamazoo based on their particular story and their particular chain of events going on in their lives. So we want to make sure that they are aware that it is a possibility, but also that leaders here in the community have the same concern that leaders across the nation have about our young lives mattering.
What's the format of your event?
Well, it's basically going to be an open format. We haven't totally formulated the process that we're going to use, you know, whether it'll be panel discussion or just open floor mic. But the hopes and the goal is for us to adequately hear from our young people what they feel is going on, what do they feel are barriers to their success, what do they need to they feel like they can help improve situations, you know, why are they frustrated? Some young people that you talk to or you meet just walking around the street, they just look mad and upset. It's like, man, what are you upset about?
Is this an event you hope to have regularly, or is it kind of, we see all these protests and things going on across the country, is this more giving the youth a productive place to release what might be inside of them?
Absolutely. It is in response to what's going on across the nation, but it is also as because we're being proactive. It's before anything of that nature, anytime, I mean, before we have an officer involved, shooting or altercation. It doesn't always have to end in death, thank the Lord. But we can still have some unfortunate interactions with young people in law enforcement. And so we want to establish the right types of relationships with our law enforcement for our young people to understand their roles in coming to keep the peace, and also to help young people realize that they have a responsibility in the quality of life here in Kalamazoo. And that's what we, you know, we want them to be able to experience life how it was with us growing up, being able to walk up and down the streets without seeing all types of violence and things of that nature going on any street corner. Our young people can barely have a social function without there being a fight or a shooting. And so they run out of places to go. And I think a lot of the anger and frustration that some of our young people, and I'm sure this is across the nation, are experiencing is because they don't have some constructive things to do. They don't have outlets available to them to where they can just release on the weekends.
What age group are you targeting with this event?
We are targeting middle school and up, middle school, high school, and, recent college graduates.
Are adults welcome to come?
Adults are welcome to come.
What's your expectation of them?
Our expectation for the adults are to be in the room and to listen, and we will provide an opportunity for adults to respond. Quite often when we talk to young people, their main frustration is that they feel as though nobody is listening to them because adults are so quick and in a hurry to give them their experience. Well, when I was a kid, okay, but it's me now.
At your event, will there be certain representatives from community organizations? In other words, who's going to hear what they have to say? Is the bigger purpose simply that they have a place to be heard and get it out, or is it to take that information and do something with it?
It is twofold. And we do have representatives from our Kalamazoo Public Safety that will be there. We have leaders from our Kalamazoo Public Schools that will be there. We have various ministers from across this community that will be there. We have individuals who are in charge or directors of community centers, neighborhood centers. These are individuals that are in leadership areas, and they are interested in knowing what's going on so that they in turn can better serve the populations that come through their doors.
As we close, I'm going to open it up to both of you and say, what are you hearing locally from young people? In your case, Jacob Penny Johnson, in terms of racism, what are you hearing? Pastor Bell, what are you hearing about racism? What are you hearing about interactions with police? I mean, I'm sure we'll hear more at these various events, but what are you hearing?
This is Pastor Bell. I'm getting mixed reports. I'm getting reports of citizens who, when we talk to them about relationships between our public safety, I'm seeing or hearing, hey, man, I saw a police officer helping a woman change a tire out in a driveway playing basketball with a few of the kids in the community. We didn't see that all the time, and it seems like there's a change. And we know from the leadership of public safety, Chief Hadley has implemented the community policing process of getting the officers back into the community, walking the beats, getting to know members of our community, and so that they're not looked upon as an outsider when they come. Drive into a neighborhood, if they're spending enough time, they're going to know people by name, and they're going to remember those names. And you can easily communicate with people when you have relationships built.
So you're beginning to see a change.
Yes, I'm beginning to see a change. But I still hear those stories of individuals who feel as though they are still being harassed. At times, specifically our young black males being stopped, wanting to be searched.
Without cause.
Without cause. And when they say, no, I don't want you to search my car, I haven't done anything wrong, they'll be searched anyway. But we're hoping that we can continue to educate a lot of our young males in particular and young females on how to carry themselves, how to properly respond to our police officers so that it diffuses a situation instead of escalate. Yes, they may be caught up in the moment feeling as though they're being mistreated and disrespected and all those types of things. But that at that moment is not the time to handle that part of the situation.
We're going to give the final word to Jacob Penny Johnson, being that you're the younger one in the room and these events deal with you.
Yeah, so I can feel it and sense it and see it that, you know, the issue of race and racism is something that's being lifted up right now in our nation. I mean, when we look at the recent police killings, specifically of young people, I mean, Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, Tamir Rice, and many others, we see that there's some real issues of race and racism that are still at hand. And then me being somewhat of a history buff, you know, I have to look at the history of some of these things. And although I do know that there are very much so good police officers, when I go back into some history, I also know that policing in the United States was very much tied to slavery and slave catching. And I think part of what we need to do with our young people is to look at the historical context of our nation and our local community right here in Kalamazoo, and how the issue of racism has been built up, and that it's not something that's just here now, but that there's been some real buildup and some real tension in our nation throughout the beginning of its history. And I think in order to move forward, we specifically as young people, we need to talk about this issue. Me and Pastor Bell were talking about my father, who was part of a local boycott here in Kalamazoo in the civil rights movement. And, you know, being a son of a local civil rights movement, I still see that there's definite gaps in between the civil rights movement of the 60s and 70s and what young people of color are facing here today. And I think we need to bridge some of those generation gaps and also create safe spaces where young people can talk about race and racism. I think a lot of our, you know, educational institutions and youth-serving organizations are somewhat, I don't want to call them out and say failing, but we're not talking about race and racism like we should be. You know, our nation and our history is very much bathed in this issue of race and racism. And we have made a lot of strides throughout history. And I think still in order to move forward, we have to look at the past and be able to talk about what's going on in the here and now.
Pastor Bell actually wants to say one more thing.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. In a lot of the demonstrations across this nation, what you see are blacks and whites out protesting the injustices that are going on in our communities across this nation. No matter what city, whether it's Baltimore or Ferguson, you saw African Americans and Caucasians and brown people and people of every ethnic group out there protesting because the entire nation saw it with their own eyes. So it's not like we're giving the story as it used to be in old times, verbatim, based on what we saw. And then they have to challenge the veracity or integrity of the person telling the story. Well, now the nation saw the Edmund Pettus Bridge massacre, I should say. And the nation saw young people being beat. They saw the young man being choked. So it's not a lie that's been, these things have been happening to African Americans in our community for centuries. We only now have video and footage to see and show to say, I told you I was telling the truth. And I told you these things happen. So I think our young people today, both black and white, are having an opportunity, as Jacob indicated, that we can see, we can have valid discussions to deal with what we actually see, what we actually have heard, and what we actually know. And I do appreciate seeing multi-ethnic individuals out there protesting, because it shows that we are closer together as a nation than it's what's being represented or portrayed by the media.
We've been hearing from organizers for two upcoming youth forums, Jacob Penny Johnson of the Kalamazoo Youth Summit and the Reverend Lindsay Bell of Youth Lives Matters. The Youth Summit will be held Saturday, and the Youth Lives Matter Forum is scheduled for Monday. They are free and open to the public, and you do not have to register in advance. For more information and a longer version of my interview, visit our webpage at wmuk.org. For West Southwest, I'm Earlene McMichael.